listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Chris Molina.
Much like your first love or your first job, everyone remembers their first car. Maybe it was an old beater with broken knobs and gauges that leaked oil everywhere. Or perhaps it was something sporty and flashy and ran like a dream.
Whatever the case, you probably have stories and memories about that car, like epic road trips or epic breakdowns. As part of the History Channel's series last summer, The Cars That Made America, several celebrities reminisced about their old cars. Here's Tim Allen, Wyclef Jean, Pilar Lastra, and Dee Snider.
My first car was a 66 Corvair Corsa, and I promptly learned what oversteer was, and I wrecked it. And on the way to getting it back, I hit it again.
My first car ever, LTD station wagon. I called them the ghetto limo. But we used to at least fit like 11 in that car going to a party. We pull up and then the back door opens and you see like people crawling out of the car.
My very first car was a 1989 Dodge Colt and it sucked. I was never gonna be the popular girl with that car.
The first day I had it, the heater cord blew. And I never had heat again in the car, and it burnt oil, and it was a bomb. But it was still my first car. I called it Seabiscuit.
New Central Time producer Bill Martins recently parted with his first vehicle, and he joins us here in the studio. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Judith.
So what was your first car?
First car was a 2001 Ford Taurus. That was a college graduation gift from mom and dad in 2003. So it was just a baby when I got it. Kind of a spring green tan color, 18,000 miles. And man, I drove that thing pretty much every day up until about a month ago. So almost 15 years.
So would you say this was a pretty good car then, Bill?
Yeah, it held up really well. Mechanically, when you have a car for a long time, things fail and you have to get parts replaced. That's nothing unusual. But the biggest problem was probably the rust, because it wasn't until about 2 years ago that my wife and I got a house that had a garage. Mm-hmm. And before that, it just sat outside all the time, especially in winter. I wasn't very good at getting it washed. Water does a funny thing when it gets really cold out. It freezes.
What?
Yeah, I know. Get out of here, right? So, all the salt and slop just ate away at it. And the color hid dirt really, really well. So even during the summer, it always looked clean. So I never really got it washed. And, the rust just kind of gradually ate it away.
So that's what brought you to having to get rid of it?
Yeah, it was last summer I took it to the shop to have some routine work done. And as long as they were going to have it up on the lift, I said, hey, can you guys just give me a rust assessment here? Because, you can see the rust along the back wheels really bad, but you can't really tell what's going on underneath. And so they put it up there, and there were nickel and dime size holes in the frame.
Oof.
Right underneath the engine.
Oh, dear.
Probably not where you want to have holes in your car,
no.
Right? And so they suggested don't even put any more money into this car, save it for a new one, and that's what I did.
So what happened to the car then? I know that you've got a new car now, but, I think there's always that temptation to, give your old car the good old Viking funeral or something. What ended up happening to it?
I wound up having that towed away. I was, so when they told me not to put any more money into it, I did not put any more money into it. And the drive home that last day was really kind of scary. It was kind of like, when you're driving a vehicle on a really windy day, you can feel it blow around a little bit.
Sure.
My car was doing that on calm days.
Ooh.
And it was making all kinds of weird noises and stuff. So I was thankful just to get the thing home. And I didn't even trust being able to take it to a salvage yard. I couldn't give it to anybody because I just couldn't. I didn't want to doom anybody with that.
Not to mention the liability.
Exactly, probably. Exactly. So, yeah, it's in Ford Taurus heaven now.
So what did you replace it with?
2002 Ford Explorer. Another oldie. So this was, it was kind of weird how this came about. So my dad passed away in December. And when I was up there for the funeral, mom was like, would you have any interest in, dad's Explorer? And I thought, yeah, absolutely. And my wife and I wanted an SUV anyway to carry stuff around and just a nice bigger vehicle. And so, but we weren't going to get it until mom bought a brand new car because my dad liked to collect cars. Mom didn't want to do any of that. So she wanted to get rid of all of them. So she bought herself a brand new Buick Encore. And once she did that, she was able to sell us the Explorer. And then it was bye-bye Taurus.
So, Bill, if I did my math right, you had your first car for about 15 years.
Right.
In comparison, I had my first car for about a year and a half before it finally bit the dirt. I would imagine during that time you racked up a lot of good memories with this car. What was your favorites?
To be honest with you, I can't really think of a specific memory. I didn't take it on any crazy road trips. I didn't have any, you know, as you said, epic breakdowns or anything like that. It was just a matter of driving that car nearly every day for 15 years, and there's just something comforting about what's familiar. Even the quirky stuff. Like, this drove my wife nuts, but she didn't have the right touch to it, I'm convinced. So when you had to turn the volume knob on the radio just right in order to turn the volume down. If you didn't do it just right, it just got louder and louder, and would blow you out of the car. So you had to have just the right touch. And I'm pretty sure I was the only one who could do it. And I couldn't, not every single time I was able to get it right, but most of the time I did.
So clearly, Bill, it was time for the Taurus to go to Taurus heaven, as you said. But do you ever miss it?
Sometimes, especially, you know, when I'm out at the grocery store or out driving around and I see one that kind of looks like that, you know, it kind of brings back some memories. It was harder, I think, like maybe the last week or so, just when I knew that I was going to be doing away with it. It's like, oh, this might be the last time I put gas in it, or the last time I drive it here, or the last time I do this. So that part was hard, but I really love the Explorer, and that kind of has taken away any sort of weird feelings.
Did you save any mementos?
I did. I ripped off the Ford decal off the grill, and it's hanging up in the office now.
Whoa.
It's covered in salt. It needs a bath.
We'll have to come by and check that out. Well, Bill, thanks for joining us and sharing the story.
Yeah, that was fun. Thank you.
Bill Martins is a new producer for Central Time, and he was here telling us about his first car.
And now it's time for you to tell us about your first car at 800-642-1234. What was it? How did you get it? Did you buy it, or was it a hand-me-down? What do you remember the most about it? And how did you feel when you finally parted with it? Maybe you're still driving it right now. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org.
Joining us now to talk about that strong emotional bond we often have with our first cars is Michael Marsden. He's Professor Emeritus of English, American Studies, and Media Studies at St. Norbert College. He's an expert on the automobile in American culture. And Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Judith. It's good to be back with you.
So we have to ask, what was your first car?
My first car was a 1951 Mercury four-door. It had what they call opera doors that opened to the center, back and front. It had full skirts on it, and it was what they call a semi-automatic, which meant you put it in first and second gear, but the third gear, you put it in first gear, second and third were just clutchless. So it was an interesting car.
And how long did you drive this car for?
I drove it for only a few years, maybe 3 or 4 years, and I sold it to my brother. And so he drove it for a couple of years. One of the quirks of it, because it had a very, I guess, a hot engine, and basically it would vapor lock on the fuel pump all the time. So whenever I went out on a date, I'd have to carry a can of water with me to jump over the fuel pump to break the vapor lock.
That's always a chick magnet, isn't it, when you have to fix the car as you're going?
Right, exactly.
Well,
my first car.
Why do you think we have such an attachment to whatever our first vehicle is whenever we get it?
I think partly is because I think historically this is certainly true for generations. And I think what happens is it's associated with freedom and mobility, and it's our opportunity to explore the world, to go where we want to go, when we want to go, under what conditions we want to go. And so we're emotionally attached to that object. And certainly you find a lot of baby boomers, for example. I missed them by a few years, but the baby boomers are now collecting a lot of cars from the 60s and 70s and restoring them or buying them restored. So the pony cars, the Mustangs, the Camaros of those, the Cougars of the 60s, and then the muscle cars of the 70s, because they associated that particular brand or that particular style of car with enormous freedom and mobility. And they will spend a lot of money and time keeping those cars restored.
And, Michael, do you ever have the temptation to go out and try to find another car just like your first car, maybe one with a little bit of a better fuel pump?
Actually, my brother found the exact car.
The exact one?
Not the exact one. I shouldn't say the exact one.
You got us really excited there.
The exact model, which has to be restored. So he beat me to it.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. So I'll share, my first car was a 1972 Olds Delta 88. It was a boat. I mean, this is a huge, huge car. I am rather on the short side, so you could barely see me over like the window on the driver's side. And I bought it for my friend Dave, who we called Deuce, and it was called the Deuce-mobile. So I had the Deuce-mobile, and it definitely had a certain cachet in our little group of friends because it was a super cool car, and I loved that car.
Yeah, and you know, again, other cars too over time that we've had. In fact, I think I bought my last new car in 1968 until this past fall, and I finally ordered a new car. But I can remember each one of those cars, and there was always something associated with those cars. And as you spoke with earlier on the show, that I kept pieces of them, like a hubcap or a part of the car, just to have a memento.
And I'm curious too, Michael, you know, we heard about, it seems like everyone's first car has their quirk, whether it's the fuel pump, whether it's, you know, Bill's car with the crazy volume control. I remember with my first car, I think it was like the lock on the passenger door didn't work quite right, so you couldn't get into it. So you had to go in through the back seat and then crawl into the front. I mean, is that part of the fun, like when we reminisce about our first cars, that there was something like that we had to overcome almost with them?
I think so. And quirkiness is one of the things we do remember. Over the weekend, I had a chance to talk to three millennials who are college-age millennials, and basically about their first car and did they have an emotional attachment to it. And it was interesting. They said they would never want to go back and try to, you know, buy a restored version of it. They were happy to have it for the freedom and mobility, but they weren't attached to the car itself as much as I think earlier generations were. And talk about quirkiness. One of them told me that what he found most memorable about the car was that one day he lifted up the front mat and found a plant growing on through the floorboard. You know, moisture from the air conditioning system had combined with dirt and had given some proper soil for the plant to grow under the mat.
We're talking with Michael Marsden right now. He's Professor Emeritus of English, American Studies, and Media Studies at St. Norbert College. He's an expert on the automobile in American culture, and we're talking about first cars.
And you can join the conversation as well at 800-642-1234. What was your first car, and how did you get it? What was your favorite memory about that car, good or bad? How did you feel when you finally parted with it? And maybe you're still driving it? What's your secret to success with this car? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up the conversation and get to your calls right after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Chris Molina. Right now, we're talking about our first cars and the emotional attachment that we have with those vehicles. Michael Marsden is our guest. He's a professor emeritus of English, American Studies, and Media Studies at St. Norbert College. He's also an expert on the automobile and American culture.
And let's go to the phones, and Jack in Neshoah is up first. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Don't say that in the airport. My first car was a 1965 Rambler Classic, four doors. It was black with lots of chrome, red interior.
Ooh.
I had it. My dad gave it to me, and I had it for a month in the spring of my senior year of high school. I drove it to a party and parked it on a very narrow country road.
Uh-oh.
One of my friends had too much to drink. Got in his car and picked mine among all the cars and hit it and totaled it out.
Ooh.
That had to hurt.
It was tough, but I had the biggest roller coaster ride in the next 12 hours. The next day, I bowled in a tournament, and I won a trip to Washington, D.C. So
wow.
I had the bad and the good.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that, Jack. Yeah, that's tough, especially just a month in. That's still the honeymoon period.
Yeah, I can't imagine having the first car and then just having it taken away from you. Michael, have you heard stories like this from people where, you know, the car ends up crashing in some spectacular fashion?
Oh, yes. And, then, you know, and again... It's the opposite, isn't it? It's not the joy, but the sorrow of losing something that you value, or something that perhaps a parent gave to you, perhaps that is associated with a lot of high emotional things for you, and then it's gone. it's gone because it's been wrecked or stolen. That's another negative, obviously.
Jack, thanks for that call. Let's move next to Green Bay, and Erica is up. Hi, Erica.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My father bought his father, my grandfather's 1969 Buick Wildcat. It had a brown vinyl hard top, and I was really excited, and I didn't realize it was really coveted because it had a really big engine. You don't think of your grandpa driving a car like that. But I used to cruise the main, and I got a lot of attention, so that was fun. But then my dad decided it was time to sell it, so he found this guy, and he said, oh, he's so clean-cut and such a nice young man, and he's got a little boy. Well, it turns out he was a known burglar in the community and came back and burgled our next-door neighbor of all of her sterling. It was terrible.
Oh, no, and used the car?
And he used my grandpa's car as a getaway car.
Oh,
my goodness.
Wow. Well, did that known burglar get known by the police?
Oh, yes. In fact, they didn't believe me. I called them and I said, you know, I found my old car in the neighborhood. I never met the man. And they thought I was just, you know, imagining things. And then I mentioned his name and their eyes perked up and they said, okay, well, just to let you know, he has been known to come back to the scene of the crime, and he has shot at people before. And my parents were out of town, so I was home alone as a teenager. It was a very memorable, scary experience all surrounding my very first really fun car that I was sorry to see go.
Wow. Well, thanks for that story, Erica. And Mike, you know, it seems like these first cars often have these great legends associated with them.
They do. Family stories, personal stories that that just simply connect through the car. And, you know, in a sense, it's why people collect cars, because they want to have those continued memories and associations. And they simply connect to that object. And, you know, it's a song will bring out at what won't a certain emotion at a certain time in your life, and you connect to it. Well, same with cars. Cars, you know, one of the things that when I developed the course on the automobile and American culture, the basic premise was every aspect of American life has been touched by the automobile, you know, from courtship to crime. There are many connections, and important moments in our lives are connected to cars. And I think that, you know, we come home from the hospital in a car, and sadly, we leave this world in a car. When we get our best ride in the life and we're leaving it, ultimately. But so the car is always there at these key moments in our lives. So it's no question that there are these deep emotional attachments to it.
Let's try to get one more call in. Mike in Fond du Lac is up next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. My first car was a 1962 Chevy Nova. Was not a muscle car by any chance. It had a 194 cubic inch engine in it. The unique thing about this car is you'd be driving down the road and it would just die. And you'd pull over to the side of the road, I'd get out, go back by the spare tire, pull out the distributor that I'd got from the junkyard, walk around in front, lift the hood, pull the distributor out. That these distributors, it just ground them up like a baby rattle. I knew from experience where top dead center was on the number one piston, so I'd take the spark plug out, turn the engine over till it looked like it was about top dead center, put the new distributor in, start it up, turn the distributor till it sounded like it was running right, tighten it down, and away I'd go. I put four distributors in this car.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Mike, thank you so much for your call. And Michael, what I'm taking away from this segment is the next time I'm at a social gathering or a party or something, if I need an icebreaker, asking what your first car was is probably a good go-to option.
It would be. And they could ask them also, were there any quirks about the particular car? Mm-hmm.
Well, and we actually asked our coworkers about their first cars, and we've had so many great calls that we haven't even gotten to that. But, you know, the quirks, Malcolm Brett, who's the director of Broadcast and Media Innovation, says his car was a 1962 Volvo 122S, and the unique carburetors needed adjustments about every 5 minutes or so, it seemed. It seems like a lot of people are repairing these first cars on the fly.
Yeah, they're learning. You have to learn. It's a good learning device, actually. Yes.
And I'm wondering, Michael, as we enter this era where we're hearing a lot about millennials maybe not wanting to get driver's licenses anymore, we're hearing about the incoming movement for driverless cars, are you worried that maybe we're losing something here if we're moving towards a society that puts a little less value on automobiles?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. We're losing something. The culture is changing. Millennials are delaying getting a driver's license. They're not getting a driver's license. In other words, many of them still get driver's licenses unless they live in a very urban area where they can use public transportation. So they delay it, though. I think that's one of the trends. And again, I think what I learned by talking at least to a few of them, and this is casual, this is not scientific, but is that they're not connected so much to the machine itself, to the object, but they are connected to the mobility and to the freedom and to the openness of the possibilities that the car brings. So I think that's a shift.
It also seems like cars just work better. I was just thinking the other day, like, you just don't see cars broken down along the side of the road as much as you did in past years. So maybe we're losing some of those good stories, too, because the engineering has just advanced.
Well, the engineering has, I mean, if you can, 100,000 miles is nothing for a car today. You go back to 1950, that would have been extraordinary. 80,000 miles on a set of tires today is nothing. Go back to the 50s. You're looking to get 10,000 miles out of a set of tires. So when you look at all the technological advances, they are more reliable. We take them more for granted. There are still quirky cars out there.
And we'll leave it there. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Michael Marsden is a professor emeritus of English, American Studies, and Media Studies at St. Norbert College. He joined us to talk about the emotional bond we have with our first cars. And you can tell us all about your first car over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Bonus points if you've got a photo to share.